We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, like, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Never get into a car with a stranger. That's something everyone's parent has told them at one point or another. But when 11-year-old Trudy Appleby got into a car on the morning of August 21st, 1996, she wasn't with a stranger.
Trudy's family believes she was with someone she knew, someone with whom she felt safe. But Trudy wasn't safe. She was never seen again after that day. The 25-year anniversary of Trudy's disappearance just passed, and police believe they know exactly who took Trudy Appleby. Will this be the year the little girl finally gets justice? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Trudy Appleby. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I appreciate all of your patience with our 1 week absence.
It was a much needed vacation.
Yeah. We also, in that time, got several new members on Patreon who we would like to give a big shout out to. Most of you guys joined so that you could get parts 2 and 3 of the Bryceless Pieces story early, which was just crazy, that whole story was. And, you know, we also released like a vacation video. So we did a video version of Unplugged from the Darkness.
Yeah. Last minute. No script.
Yeah. Yeah. Version. We just kind of did that. But I will be editing that and releasing it as an audio version for you, for those of you who prefer to listen to it that way. And we will have a new episode for you soon as well. So keep an eye out for that. And again, all of that is available on all levels of our Patreon. But right now, I would like to thank Thorun J, Sarah D, Allison L, LMH, Gina O, Elizabeth M, Jennifer E, Wanda M, Shannon M, Vanessa W, Jessica M, and our fellow Leesburgers, Heather C and Nadia V.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You've got some locals.
Uh-huh. A few people that I know.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So very exciting when I saw their names come up as well. But I mean, very exciting when I saw all of your names.
Thank you guys come all up. So much.
Yeah. So that was very cool. So thank you very much. You are all amazing. And if you're listening and you would like to join in on the fun, you can do so at patreon.com/attwgpod. But now, let's get to our latest episode, The Story of Trudy Appleby. And, you know, I know unsolved cases can be frustrating to listeners. You know, there are definitely a lot of people who just straight up do not listen to true crime podcasts that feature unsolved cases because, like, they like everything
they
to
like
be resolved.
Closure, yeah.
I mean, listen, I've watched roughly 750 hours of Law and Order. Like, I love a good resolution.
Yeah, that's exactly. But I was gonna say that those are the people that, you know, grew up on, you know, the shows that are solved within 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah, like the best shows. So I get that. And obviously, you know, this show is absolutely not that. But, you know, I did want to come back from vacation and kind of like ease our way into it. So I wanted to bring you this story because it could be officially solved at any moment. You know, this is one of those ones like the Kristen Smart case where it felt like we are just on the precipice of it being solved for like years. And, you know, it finally was this past year. And this is very similar because like all of the pieces are kind of falling into place on this one. So, you know, I just want to talk about it because like, I just think that we need to kind of amplify it and really help in any way that we can put the pressure on people. And when I say put the pressure on, I'm really, kind of talking in the way that the local police department that's in charge of this case is talking, because they, for the past several years, have taken to trolling their suspects on social media.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of like this. I like that tactic.
It's actually pretty great. And, you know, I'll get into more detail about that as we go in. But yeah, this caught my attention because like the detectives literally just started trolling people on Facebook. So if I can help do that, then, yeah, you know, sure. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So let's dig in. Trudy Leanne Appleby was born on September 4th, 1984, to Brenda Edelman and Dennis Appleby. Trudy grew up in Moline, Illinois, and was well-known and well-liked by her neighbors. She was described as incredibly smart and vivacious and bold, and the story of how she met her best friend perfectly sums that up. Amber Dunlap, her best friend, told KWQC-TV6 how she met Trudy. She said, quote, "My mom found her in my yard. She asked her, 'Can I help you?' And Trudy said, 'Do you have any kids I can play with?' She sent me outside and we became best friends."
That's pretty bold.
Right?
Yeah.
I could see our littlest one, Miller, doing that. Like, "Hey, you have any kids I can play with? Can you like do some kids over here?"
"I'm bored.
Yeah.
Come and play with me."
Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't get cuter than that. And from that day on, the girls were basically inseparable. Amber's mom, Kelly, told TV6, quote, "She was like my kid. She was over here all the time," end quote. In fact, Trudy was over at Amber's house the night before she disappeared. Amber and her mom have talked about this night, you know, many times over the years, and they describe it as a typical visit. The girls ate hot dogs and mac and cheese, and they rollerbladed outside in front of the house. Trudy had apparently been invited by a family friend to go swimming the next day, but her father said no because they were getting ready to take a trip, and Trudy still needed to pack and, you know, just get ready. So Trudy told Amber she'd call her tomorrow, like she always did, and headed home. Moline is located in northwest Illinois along the Mississippi River. Trudy had been invited to go swimming on Campbell's Island, which was only about 15 minutes away. So apparently near where they lived in Moline on the Mississippi, there were like all these little islands around where you could like boat out to and go hang out and go swimming and stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah. So Campbell's Island was one of them. And that's where she had been invited. That same TV6 article says that Trudy was invited by someone Dennis knew from CB Radio. So apparently Dennis was like very involved in this and met these people in real life. And, you know, some of them had become family friends. And so that's who had invited Trudy to go swimming. And this is like apparently somebody who, you know, she had been around many times before.
Yeah. So it's not like this was, you know, somebody that he had only ever spoken to on a CB radio.
Yeah, I didn't get that impression at all. And it didn't seem like I said, because he did say she couldn't go, but right. It didn't sound like it had anything to do with who asked her.
Gotcha.
It was just, you know, more of like logistics and just kind of normal stuff. At this time, Trudy's parents weren't together, and Trudy lived with Dennis. So it was just the two of them in the house. On the morning of August 21st, Dennis got up to get ready for work. He checked in on Trudy and saw her sleeping. He returned that afternoon and brought lunch for the two of them, but Trudy wasn't there. This is not something that particularly worried Dennis because it was the end of summer, you know, so he figured Trudy was just off at Amber's house or like another friend's house, just enjoying the last few days before school started.
Yeah, being a typical latchkey kid.
Exactly. Yeah. So he left her a note and went back to work when his lunch break was over. But when Dennis arrived home that evening, everything remained on the table exactly as he had left it. And that's when he began to worry. Mm. When Trudy still hadn't come home by 7 p.m., Dennis started calling neighbors and friends. And, you know, obviously he called Amber and, you know, everybody that he could think of. But nobody had seen his daughter. at around 7:30, after he made all of those calls, he called the Moline police and said, quote, "We got a problem," end quote. Despite the fact that she's only 11, police initially thought that Trudy could have been a runaway. But Dennis never believed that. He did think it was possible that she was with her mom, but once he determined she wasn't, like, he definitely knew something was wrong. He told the dispatch just days after she disappeared, quote, "Something is just wrong. Somebody's tricked her, fed her a story. She had to be thinking she was coming right back. Nothing is gone, not her purse, her makeup. She knew we were going on vacation," end quote. And everyone who knew Trudy also believed this. Trudy wasn't known to be a troubled child. She had a good relationship with both of her parents. She, you know, didn't have any major risk factors. But she was also outgoing and had a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. And about 30 minutes after her father left for work the morning of her disappearance, multiple witnesses saw Trudy. She was inside of a car in her father's driveway with an adult male behind the wheel. Witnesses described the car as a silver or gray boxy four-door sedan similar to a Chevy Celebrity.
I don't even know what that is. What a celebrity looks like.
I actually think this came up in another one of our cases. Like, I think this was, this might've been the same car that Cindy Anderson drove.
Was it?
I think it was. I could be wrong, but here, let's look up a picture real quick.
So, I mean, it looks like just like your standard 80s car. I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Four-door, yeah, if you very think like square
80s sedan, like that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
None of the witnesses got any part of the license plate number, however, which makes sense because at the time there was no indication that anything was wrong.
Right. And generally speaking, the public at large doesn't like typically, you know, look at license plates unless there's an issue.
Well, exactly. And this isn't a situation where she was being dragged into the car,
right,
or anything like that. I mean, the car was in her dad's driveway. She was in the passenger seat. She was fine. You know, there's like, it was enough for somebody, a neighbor who was walking by to notice,
but not to trigger any kind of
alarm
internal
bells.
Alarms.
No, yeah. Not at all. Because by all appearances, Trudy went with this man willingly. The man himself was described as being in his 20s with curly brown hair and wearing a baseball cap, but none of the neighbors was able to identify him. Once he realized Trudy was truly missing, Dennis jumped right into action. He used his CB connections to broadcast her information all over the state.
Smart. That's,
oh, yeah,
really
absolutely.
Smart.
And 2,000 flyers were handed out at gas stations, truck stops, and major thoroughfares. By Saturday, 3 days after her disappearance, Moline police had assigned their entire detective bureau to the case.
Wow.
Yeah. And granted, I mean, I don't know how many people that is, but the point is that they were taking it very seriously, yeah, by that time. But unfortunately, they received no promising leads.
So we're assuming that the police did initial investigations right away.
Yeah, yeah.
So
from everything I read,
it's not like they just started 3 days after she
went missing. No. I think it took 3 days for them to devote everybody,
sure,
to it.
Yeah.
But no, they did. And like I said, at first they did think that she could be a runaway, but I don't think they wasted a ton of time.
Okay.
And, you know, granted, this is 1996, so this is before Amber Alerts,
right,
you know. Nobody was panicking, I think, at first in a way that you may expect people to panic nowadays. I think it did take a little time for anybody, I mean, even Trudy's father, to like really be,
sure,
worried, you,
yeah,
know? But no, it seems like the police like pretty much did what they should have been doing.
Good.
By August 30th, so about 9 days after her disappearance, police had called in the FBI for assistance and also investigated and or interviewed all of the child sex offenders in the area. But still, they came up with nothing. So they did what so many agencies did in the 90s. They brought in a psychic.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I know, obviously, we've grown up this idea. It at least brought comfort to Trudy's mother. Brenda told the dispatch, quote, "My prayer was answered when she became involved," end quote. Apparently, the psychic, Greta Alexander, said that Trudy was with a family friend, which, like, okay, good job. I mean, yeah, obviously. Like, I don't, sure. I mean, the best thing I can say about this is that, like, I don't think that this hurt the investigation.
I mean, as long as, you know, it didn't steer police in the wrong direction.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like it really steered police in any direction, really, you know?
Really? Why was it such a thing to bring psychics in the 90s?
I don't know, but they were like really, they were all over all the talk shows. Yeah. I mean, it was like constant. It was like psychics allegedly solving crimes, yeah, like 24/7, except none of them ever did. So I don't know. But, you know, like I said, I don't think it hurt the investigation, and it did bring Trudy's mother some measure of, you know, peace or hope or something. So maybe it was not terrible. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Psychics.
Yeah. But it turns out that the real star of the early days of the investigation was Amber, Trudy's best friend. As the headline in the dispatch said, quote, "For the true information, ask a child," end quote. So this article was published on September 4th, 1996, which was Trudy's 12th birthday and about 2 weeks after she disappeared. In it, Amber gave a lot of really good insight into what she thought happened to her friend and what she didn't think happened.
Okay.
She said that 3 weeks prior to her disappearance, Trudy was caught shoplifting.
Oh.
Yeah. Her father grounded her for 3 weeks. Though, like, I think it's kind of cute that this grounding apparently didn't include Amber's house. Yeah,
didn't include, like, the ability to leave the house.
Yeah, like, yeah, go over and hang out with her friends and rollerblade and eat hot dogs and stuff.
Yeah, like, what was the punishment?
I have no idea, but I think it's very cute.
Yeah.
So some people who knew about this are like, oh, she's mad at her dad, so she ran away. But Amber had a much more chilling theory. She said, quote, "What's weird is she was supposed to be ungrounded the day she was taken. Someone knew she wouldn't break the grounding rule and waited until she knew she could leave the house," end quote.
Interesting.
Yeah. And again, I'm not saying this because I believe in the psychic or anything like that, but I think this does lend credence to the theory that it was somebody Amber knew. Well, and somebody who knew her.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the scene that the witnesses, the neighbors saw, mm-hmm, that kind of justifies that as well.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Trudy was relaxed in the car.
Right. She wasn't screaming. She wasn't putting up a fight. There was no indication that she was in any kind of trouble or stress.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And if Amber's right, and it's somebody who knew that she was getting off grounding, I mean, mm-hmm, that's, you know, that's not something like everybody would know.
Yeah. But again, you know, what level of grounding was it? Because she was allowed to go out.
True. And,
you know, so that may have just been a coincidence.
Wait, weren't you the one who says that you don't believe in coincidences?
I do not believe in coincidences. You are correct.
But that wasn't the only thing that led Amber to believe Trudy knew her abductor. She agreed with everyone's assessment that her friend was too street smart to get into a stranger's car. But more importantly, Trudy and her dad had three dogs who didn't let anyone near the house.
Oh.
Yeah. Amber said, quote, "Trudy had to hold one of the dogs if we had someone over they didn't know real good. Those dogs wouldn't let anyone near Trudy," end quote.
Hmm.
And we see that. I mean, if we have somebody who comes to our house who's even somebody who's been here before, but our dog doesn't necessarily, like, remember enough.
Yeah, or they move in a funny situation.
Yeah, yeah.
or whatever, yeah, right. she reacts.
Yeah, but I mean, none of the witnesses said...
mentioned anything about the dogs going crazy or anything like that.
Nothing. I haven't heard actually a single word about the dogs other than this interview that Amber gave to the paper.
Interesting.
Like, the dogs have never come up in anything
else. So we don't know if they're, like, outside dogs, you know, on a leash or, like, a run or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or if they have free rein. Because, I mean, you know, the thought is if they're tied up somewhere, they wouldn't necessarily be going crazy, and this person could have access to the yard.
I mean, I guess, but I just feel like in the witness statements, if they were tied up like outside, is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like in the witness statements, that would have been mentioned, right? Like the dogs were going bananas.
Yeah, unless they were the type of dogs that go bananas
like, for anyone
all the time.
Yeah.
Anytime anybody walks. I mean, you know, our dog does it.
Yeah.
Anytime the front door is open, if somebody walks past our house on the sidewalk, she starts barking.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, I don't know. But I mean, I think that, you know, Amber was the closest kid to Trudy. And I think that she had a lot of insight. And, you know, so I do think that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not discounting it.
Yeah.
We don't know what the general day-to-day living situation of the dogs was.
Right. Remember, though, how... Dennis said that Trudy left all of her belongings behind, like her purse and her makeup and everything.
Yeah.
Well, she did leave everything behind that would have indicated she planned on being gone for a long time, but she did take two things with her, her bathing suit and a towel.
Okay. So are we thinking that this is the same CB friend that, was trying to take her to that island to go swimming?
Well, it's really interesting because I read... so Moline is not a large town.
Mm-hmm.
So Trudy's case got reported on extensively in the local papers. So I read a lot of contemporaneous articles about this case. And it was very interesting because you could tell the police were really trying to hold a lot of stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to like read between the lines because they never say anything like that, right? So like the very first couple of articles give you the basic facts of the case, which is like, oh, you know, she'd been invited to go out swimming with one of her dad's CB friends, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, you get these later stories that come out that say she was in this car and she took her bathing suit and things like that. But that connection is never explicitly made.
Yeah.
By anyone,
well, I mean, I'm
you
sure.
Know?
Yeah. I'm sure that that's where the police were focusing.
Right. But like they never came out and said like, hey, we are looking for these people because of X, Y, and Z. Trudy's family and friends held a candlelight vigil on her birthday, which, as I mentioned, was only about 2 weeks after her disappearance. And police continued to investigate. Her case was featured on America's Most Wanted, and both Dennis and Trudy's mom, Brenda, were given polygraphs, along with a few other family members. Everyone passed, and that came, like, from the police. So the Moline police came out and said, hey, everyone passed.
They ruled them out as suspects.
Well,
kind
not
of.
Really, because, and the police did also say that. They're like, listen, we're not ruling anyone out because she hasn't been found. But I think they are also like, you know.
They're not exerting a whole lot of effort into digging further into.
Into the parents or anything.
Parents,
so yeah, I don't think, other than the fact that obviously the parents are always a suspect.
Yeah.
I don't think they were ever actually really suspects, you mm-hmm. know. Companies donated billboards all over the Quad Cities area and flyers continued to be posted everywhere. Dennis went on talk shows, Unsolved Mysteries expressed interest, a reward fund was established, but no one came forward with any solid information. Trudy's parents, Dennis and Brenda, who never married, started off on good terms after their daughter's disappearance. Like, you know, whenever you'd read articles with him, they spoke positively of each other. And, you know, Brenda said at one point, like, that Dennis would, you know, keep her updated. And she said that he would sometimes try to, like, hide some of, you know, not hide things from her in a bad way, but more of like a trying to protect her kind of way. Like, basically, he was taking the emotional brunt of this situation, okay, is kind of what I gathered.
Gotcha.
But by the one-year anniversary of Trudy's disappearance, Brenda was placing the blame on Dennis. She said that his wild past of drugs and motorcycles was somehow to blame for Trudy's abduction. In an article published in the Quad City Times, Brenda also gave some insight into her split with Dennis and how Trudy came to live with him. She told reporters that she willingly gave up custody of Trudy when her daughter was 9 because she was suffering from depression at the time and had a learning disability. Brenda had a learning disability and was suffering from depression. So she didn't feel as though she could care for Trudy in the way that she needed to. So she assumed, though, that Trudy would then be raised by her parents.
Oh.
But as you know, like, that's not how custody works.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So Dennis had the right to have custody of Trudy, and he gladly took it.
Yeah.
Dennis told the Times that Brenda was correct. He did have a wild past, but said, quote, "That's ancient history. When Trudy came to live with me, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Now I've got a full-time job that I've been at for 4 years, end quote. He went on to say, quote, "We were best friends. She was the most important thing in my life," end quote. We know that people deal with grief differently. And while Dennis turned his into action, you know, he was the one who led the charge on Trudy's search, Brenda retreated into herself, spending most of her time at home and not speaking out very often.
Well, I mean, you said that she's got a history of depression. I mean, that's
right.
You know, something like this is gonna trigger that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So she really went inwards when all of this happened. And, you know, it really sounds like she didn't even necessarily believe that Dennis caused Trudy's disappearance or was somehow responsible for it, but she just needed something to hold on to.
I'm sure she was kind of lashing out.
Yeah.
You know, looking to place blame on somebody, kind of freaking out. You know, I mean, I can understand where she's coming from.
Well, absolutely. And in that same article where she said that Dennis was responsible, she said 2 sentences later, quote, "I just need someone to blame and I blame him," end quote.
That says it right there.
Yeah. Police were, of course, aware of Brenda's statements, but reiterated that Dennis passed a polygraph and was questioned along with 1,344 other people.
Wow.
But Trudy's case remained cold. By the 3rd anniversary of Trudy's abduction, her father, who again had been kind of the public face of her search for this entire time, started saying that he believed he knew who was responsible. He was seething as he addressed the crowd at his daughter's annual vigil, saying, quote, "I know who you are. Now I am coming to you," end quote. According to an article in the Rock Island Argus, he made allusions to knuckles and dirt as well. Moline Police Sergeant Kim Hankins told the paper, quote, "We have told him don't go out and do something that is going to put him and the case in jeopardy. But like everyone else, he thinks he knows who did this," end quote. Which I thought was a very interesting quote. "But like everyone else, he thinks he knows who did this."
Okay, so everyone else meaning not just the police and him, who else?
Like the town? I mean, I don't know. I'm just speculating. But it does seem that like there were some suspects who were not being officially named. And apparently those suspects, like the police and Dennis were on the same page. Like they suspected the same people, but just couldn't do anything about it at the time.
Yeah.
And that's how things stayed for years. There were names on investigators' radar, but they didn't release them publicly.
Well, they can't.
Vigils were held for Trudy year after year. There were spaghetti dinner fundraisers and pancake breakfasts. There were pleas for people to leave anonymous tips with Crime Stoppers. But there was no real movement on Trudy's case. Then, in 2014, tragedy struck once again. Trudy's mother, Brenda, was crossing the street in Moline when she was struck by a drunk driver and killed.
Jesus.
She was only 53 years old. She died never knowing what happened to her only daughter. In fact, it would be another 3 years before anything significant happened with Trudy's case. In 2017, a few days before the 21st anniversary of Trudy's disappearance, police finally released a name: William Ed Smith. According to a press release from the Moline police, a witness stated that he saw Smith in a gray car near his home on Campbell Island in the morning of August 21st, 1996. He had a young girl in his passenger seat. And interestingly, the vehicle was allegedly scrapped a short time after Trudy's disappearance. Ed Smith was a family friend of the Applebees. The witness told police that Ed Smith would become despondent whenever Trudy's name was mentioned, and that Ed threatened to kill him, the witness, if he ever went to police to tell them that he had seen this girl in his car that day. Smith was actually one of the people initially interviewed in 1996, but he denied seeing Trudy that day. The witness who came forward wasn't named at the time, but he allegedly gave this information to police in the early 2000s. So this is 2017 now when we get Ed Smith's name.
So he's been on their radar for a while.
Yes. Dennis said that this is the guy that had been on his radar, Ed Smith. But if you remember, Dennis was saying he knew who it was in the late 90s. So, like, Dennis didn't think that Ed Smith was involved because this witness came forward. Dennis was just even more sure that Ed Smith was involved because this witness came forward. But there are two major problems that led to this case not getting closed in 2017, you know, when the police made this public. One is that Ed Smith died in 2014.
Really?
Yeah. The second is he was in his 70s when he died. So who was the man in his 20s driving the car who was seen by multiple witnesses?
Yeah.
The witness says that Smith was driving the car near his residence on Campbell Island when he saw him and Trudy, presumably, in the car. But, you know, witnesses saw the man in his 20s at Trudy's house.
Does Ed Smith have a son?
Well, Dennis did make it clear that he didn't believe that Ed Smith was the only person involved. He told WQAD in 2017 that he gave names, plural, to the police, including Smith's, just a few days after Trudy went missing. He said, quote, "These are the people I named as the ones who I felt were responsible. I think the only thing that kept this thing going for so long is we don't have Trudy's body. It's hard to prove anything without a body," end quote.
He's not wrong.
Well, exactly. Yeah. There's no physical evidence at this point in this case whatsoever.
Right.
And clearly the people who, you know, Dennis gave the names of, they had been interviewed, but weren't talking, you know, they weren't saying anything that could lead to an arrest or anything like that. So the police really just had nothing solid. In that same interview, Dennis laid out his theory of what happened that day, telling reporter Chris Miner, quote, "I think they went on a boat and an accident happened. Could be he tried to do something funny and Trudy fought back. It would be in her nature," end quote. He went on to say, quote, "I think it happened on the east side of Campbell's Island. That's where he hung out," end quote.
So we're also assuming that the police dredged the river, looked at the river for her body.
So they have searched the area. I never read anything specifically saying that they dredged the river, though. And we're talking about the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, that's, yeah. So they searched around there, but I don't know. I can't imagine having this knowledge for so long and not being able to do anything about it. Just having to watch the people you believe to be responsible off living their lives every day.
Yeah.
While police didn't name the witness when they did this press release naming Ed Smith, Dennis did. Because, again,
he doesn't care.
No, it's 2017. And he's like, screw it. Like,
yeah.
What does he have to lose at this point? Right. So he said that the person was David Whipple, Ed Smith's son-in-law. Dennis said, quote, "He," meaning David Whipple, "knows what happened to my daughter. I believe that in my heart, 100%, end quote.
Perhaps maybe he was the 20-something-year-old in the car?
Well, so here's the interesting thing. So Whipple would have been much closer to that than Ed Smith, who was like 59 at the time or something.
Yeah.
But Dennis would have been about 35.
Yeah, but so, I mean,
you know,
through a car window.
Curly hair, wearing a hat. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely possible.
It's much more plausible than, you know, a 50-year-old.
Yeah, or an almost 60-year-old, yeah. Yeah,
being mistaken.
No, exactly. So maybe, right, is what I'll say about that.
Sure.
Detective Michael Griffin, who was the detective assigned to Trudy's case at the time, seemed to agree with Dennis's assessment, saying, quote, "There are several people still alive that know what happened, including this witness," end quote. But interestingly, what I found out is that this wasn't the first time that Dennis had publicly named Whipple.
Oh.
In an article that was shared on the Missing Trudy Appleby Facebook page in 2012, so a full 5 years before this was like officially released, Dennis said that he believed Whipple was involved. Whipple was the father of one of Trudy's best friends and apparently took several family members to Credit Island, which is another island on the Mississippi River that they would all kind of hang out on sometimes. So he believes that Whipple picked Trudy up as he had done before and took her. Another thing about Whipple, he was convicted of sexually assaulting a 10-year-old child. The incident, apparently, from what I could understand, so I found his arrest record online, and because he's in the sex offender registry. So I found that entry, but all it said was the age, like his age at the time and the age of the victim at the time. It didn't give the date of his arrest. And so I've read kind of conflicting things, but from what I gather, the incident would have happened around 1996, because what I saw online said that he was 35 at the time and the victim was 10. So in 1996, he would have been 35. He was born in December of 1960. So I think it happened right around the time of Trudy's disappearance. But from what I understand, he didn't actually go to jail or anything like for this until 6 years later.
Why?
Well,
six
I mean,
years.
Well, yeah, but I think it happened then, but I don't think, like, you know, the person came forward
I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying like it, like the trial lasted, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I just think the victim didn't come forward or what the investigation wasn't started until mm-hmm. much later. So I'm not 100%, but like I said, based on what I could find, I believe the incident itself happened around 96. But I think he didn't go to jail until 6 years later.
Hmm.
After Dennis publicly named him in 2017, though, when people were really paying attention, because apparently, I guess, like, that whole thing kind of went under the radar in 2012, like the first time he publicly named David Whipple. Whipple actually gave an interview in 2017 to Chris Miner, the same reporter.
Which is always smart to do.
Oh, dude. Like, he was just, like, standing out in his lawn. Like, it was ridiculous. He told the reporter that he didn't know anything else other than what he had told the police. He spent this interview, which is on our blog, separating himself from the incident and blaming it on his father-in-law. He said, quote, "I was sitting at home watching my two boys that day. I just happened to see the car go by. I seen Ed drive by. I seen what could have been Trudy. Probably Trudy could have been," end quote.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just got the feeling, like, it just really seemed like he was trying to confess but separate himself from any culpability or any involvement. And it was very interesting to me the way that he worded this whole thing. There was an interrogation of this guy who police believe was responsible for kidnapping these sisters from a mall in the Baltimore area in the 70s. And he, during his police interview, he kept on saying, like, "Oh, yeah, I kind of know what happened, but it was my uncle who did this." And, yeah, like, right, was, like, laying out the entire case, but was like, "Oh, yeah, but my
but
uncle
I didn't do it.
Did yeah. it." And he just told me about it.
Right.
You
it,
know?
It's alleviating the guilt that is on his conscience, you know, without implicating himself.
Right. Yeah. And that's really what I got from this. And, you know, and then, of course, the reporter's like, "So tell me about, like, the fact that you sexually assaulted a 10-year-old. And he was like, "Oh, well, you know, these people are making me out to be some sort of monster, and I'm not the monster.
Downplay it.
Like, I didn't plead guilty to that. I pled no contest."
Okay. That's... All right.
Yeah. So anyway, seriously, you all should, like, watch this interview. It's something. Whipple, you know, was out there. Like, his name was kind of floating around, but police weren't really talking about him specifically in 2017. Like I said, so Dennis in 2017 named him, you know, the reporter, like, listened and went and interviewed Whipple. And so, like, he was 100% out there, but police still weren't talking about him by name.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah.
But they did do something interesting. They started trolling Whipple and others.
I want to hear this.
According to an article on Inside Edition, Detective Griffin said, quote, "We know that those people are alive and abound. They still live in the area, and we know that they follow our social media," end quote. So Griffin started posting. But before he even started posting on social media, the Moline Police Department erected two billboards with Trudy's photo on them that said, quote, "You," in all caps, "know something. It's time to say something," end quote.
I'm already digging this tactic.
Well, yeah,
I like it.
And they didn't just, like, randomly find two empty billboards. They deliberately placed them on the daily driving routes of their suspects.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Then he posted on their Facebook page, quote, "To the people who committed the violent acts against Trudy and to those who continue to harbor their secrets, as you drive past these billboards, we wonder if you enjoy the little things in life. Little things like looking straight ahead. You're going to start looking over your shoulder, looking behind you and wondering when we are coming for you. The dark secrets of the past shall soon be brought to light, end quote.
Oh my God, I love this. This is amazing.
Yeah, and that was just the first of many posts. And another one that was quoted in this article reminds me of the end of Michelle McNamara's book about the Golden State Killer, I'll Be Gone in the Dark. So basically the book ends with her like writing this letter to the, at the time, unknown killer.
Right.
Because, you know, she felt like they were close to figuring out who he was. And so she wrote this letter to him like, you know, do you feel the walls closing in on
you?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing. Everybody should read that book. It's one of the best. But anyway, this Facebook post says, quote, to those who are responsible for the disappearance of Trudy Appleby, it's been 8,014 days since we last saw her. For the last 8,014 days, you have been lucky. But you will need to continue to be lucky every day for the rest of your lives. We only need to be lucky one day. Is today that day? We are coming for you, and the truth shall be brought to light. End quote.
This is great.
Right?
This is great stuff.
They've got some
man.
Good writers over at the Moline Police Department.
I know. I feel like more police departments should take up this this mantle and legitimately intimidate people online.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably some legal
well, no, and I think that you know, that unfortunately, that can go very badly with cops intimidating people online.
Yeah, yeah,
as
right.
It turns out, they're not great with boundaries typically.
But I mean, in this instance, this is fantastic.
Yeah. Detective Griffin explained his approach saying, quote, you can call it what it is. I'm trolling them. I'm trying to be very pointed about it. This is the homicide of an 11-year-old girl and the concealment of her body. I'm talking to these people in ways they will understand, end quote.
Wow.
Yeah. Because again, like, I mean, much like Dennis didn't have anything to lose, like, you know, Detective Griffin is probably like the sixth detective
I'm sure,
on this case.
Yeah.
It's 20 some odd years late. Like, what does he have to lose
at
this point?
You're
you know?
Absolutely right. Yeah.
He went on to say that it had been over 20 years. Relationships change. And, you know, maybe people don't want to hold on to somebody else's secret anymore.
Yeah.
But investigators weren't just trolling, I should say. They were actively trying to move the investigation forward. While the gray car that Trudy was believed to have been in was long gone, there was still a large piece of evidence in existence. Ed Smith's boat. Police located the boat in December of 2018. Mm. It had new owners who had, you know, no connection
sure.
to the case.
Yeah.
But they gave the boat up. In January of 2019, police seized the boat and tested it for DNA. They were saying that the porous materials in the boat, you know, could very well still have DNA present even so many years later.
I mean, it's worth testing.
Yeah, of course. Now, the results haven't been publicly released, but investigators did say that one of the buccal swabs that they had taken was promising. And this swab was what led to the latest break in the case. Just last year in 2020, police named two more persons of interest.
Mm.
In August of 2020, right around the 24th anniversary of Trudy's disappearance, Moline police officially named David Whipple as a person of interest. Also named was a man named Jameson Jamie Fisher, who was a friend of Whipple and Ed Smith. Detective Griffin confirmed that both men were entwined with the boat investigation. He also said that they knew exactly what happened to Trudy on August 21st, 1996. And now Fisher is even younger than Whipple. He would have been in his
20s.
Early 20s at the time. I don't know. He's bald now, but, you know, I have because he's like 49 now or whatever, or 45 or something. But he, yeah, so I don't know. I couldn't find any pictures of him when he was younger. So I don't know if he could have fit that description, but the age definitely does fit.
Is there any indication that Trudy would have known him?
I believe so. I mean, from what, again, we're just kind of reading between the lines.
Yeah.
But apparently, these are the names that Dennis gave to the police.
Okay.
Fisher is a habitual offender with an arrest record dating back to a burglary arrest in 1993. Now, in 1993, he would have been 18. So that's just the start of his adult arrest right. record. So, like, who knows what was going on before that?
Yeah.
He also has charges related to drugs, destroying evidence, and other thefts. He was most recently in court in January of 2021 for auto theft. Now, in August of 2021, we have just passed, as of this recording, like a week ago, the 25-year mark of Trudy's disappearance. While Trudy has yet to receive justice, the walls do appear to be closing in on the people who harmed her. Hopefully, with continued pressure, we won't see another anniversary pass without Trudy coming home. Trudy's best friend Amber and her mom Kelly have never forgotten about Trudy. Trudy called Kelly mom number two, and she has fought for Trudy alongside Dennis for the past quarter of a century. She routinely writes letters to the editor. She and Amber run the Missing Trudy Appleby Facebook page. She does interviews constantly. I mean, along with Dennis, Kelly has really been the face of the search for Trudy. And she has said publicly that she will fight for Trudy and fight for answers until the day she dies. So I want to leave you with her most recent letter to the editor, just published earlier this month in Rock Island Dispatch Argus. In it, she said, quote, August 21st will be 25 years since the abduction of Trudy Appleby occurred. She was 11 years old, just shy of turning 12, when on the morning of August 21st, 1996, she was seen leaving her driveway in Moline in a gray car driven by a white male in his 20s with dark wavy hair and a ball cap. It is believed she went with someone she knew and trusted for a day of swimming, fully expecting to return home afterward. She never returned home. In 2017, it was announced that she was last seen on Campbell's Island in East Moline with William Ed Smith a bit later that morning in a car similar to the one she left her neighborhood in. She was not seen after that. She left with someone she knew and trusted and met with a terrible fate. Trudy could have seen, done, and been so many things in these past 25 years, but she couldn't because she was robbed of that. She was robbed of her life, and all of us who love Trudy were robbed of her and a life with her. Someone knows what happened, and you know who you are. You choose instead to still keep the answer to yourself, yourselves, while we, her family and friends, agonize through the immense pain of never knowing where she is and wondering if we will ever find her. Speak up. You know something. It's time to say something. Justice for Trudy. Trudy Leanne Appleby has been missing since August 21st, 1996. She's between 4'8" and 5 feet tall and 75 to 85 pounds at the time of her disappearance. Trudy was 11 years old when she disappeared. She would be 36 today. If you have any information on Trudy Appleby's disappearance, please contact the Moline Police Department at 309-797-0401. You can see all the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.